As the nationwide debate over racism continues, we wanted to check in with someone tackling the issue in an unusual way, by making friends with members of the Ku Klux Klan. Daryl Davis is a black blues musician and author who has spent many years forming these relationships. Davis spoke with NPR in 2017 about how he got started with his work after he and a Klansman bonded over music in a bar.
The fact that a Klansman and a black person could sit down at the same table, enjoy the same music, that was a seed planted. So what do you do when you plant a seed? You nourish it.
Many have left the KKK after talking with Daryl Davis. They've even given him their white hooded robes and other memorabilia. So far, Davis has collected more than 200 items. Today, he's reflecting on the work ahead during an historic moment when our country has come up against a pandemic, a racial reckoning, an election, an insurrection, and now a new president trying to pave a united path forward. Daryl Davis, welcome to Here and Now. How nice to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Well, after an historic year when we have seen protests and inflamed debates over racism, how are you feeling about the work that's ahead of you?
I am feeling extremely optimistic and hopeful. Look at the marches of last year, 2020, in the wake of the George Floyd lynching, if you will. What did the power structure see then? They saw an ocean of black people and an ocean of white people marching together. You know, we've never had that large a collective voice. Americans, white, black, whatever, working together for the common cause. And that, my friend, is the definition of the United States.
You say the pages of progress are turning faster.
Yes.
How would you gauge the state of white supremacy in America right now? Is it shifting in 2021?
What's happening is this. They are becoming very fearful. So what people in the KKK and neo-Nazis and alt-right, what they tell me is, Daryl, I don't want my grandkids to be brown. They call it the browning of America or white genocide through miscegenation, in other words, race mixing. And they're very concerned about their identity being erased. So this is why you're seeing all these upticks in recruitment for white supremacist groups, all these lone wolves, the insurrection at the Capitol. What did you see there predominantly? Mostly white people. These are the ones who are fearing that their identity is being erased. And it's a false perception. Nobody's going to take over and erase people out of this country. We all are Americans. We need to learn how to get along with each other.
And so I wonder what you were thinking on January 6th, the day the mob stormed the U.S. Capitol, because you base your approach on listening and understanding. So how did you make sense of what happened that day?
So I saw it coming. I was not in the least bit surprised. And this, you know, when you see somebody walking through the Capitol carrying the Confederate battle flag and somebody else wearing a Camp Auschwitz T-shirt, you don't have to ask what they're doing there or what they want. You know what they want.
Mr. Davis, you have memorabilia from white supremacists, from KKK members. You have their white hooded robes. Why do you keep these things? Why are they in your house? What do they represent to you?
They represent that those people no longer believe in what those items stood for. And, you know, people always ask me, well, Daryl, you know, why do you have that stuff? Why don't you burn it? Well, no, I'm not going to burn it. It is a part of American history. Racism, the KKK, is just as American as baseball, apple pie, and Chevrolet. It's a part of our history. We all have the good, the bad, the ugly, and the shameful in our history. And does not need to be destroyed. We need to learn from it. So I have a 501c3. I plan to open a museum one day, and that's where that stuff will be. Right now, I'm loaning a lot of it to the Orlando Holocaust Center for an exhibition they are putting on in the fall.
You've spent years going around the country, talking to Klansmen in person to form relationships, to form friendships. And I'm curious how the pandemic has changed your efforts. I mean, were you trying to talk to KKK members on Zoom? How did that work?
Absolutely. Some of them actually do have Zoom. And yeah, I've talked to a lot of them on Zoom or through email or phone or telephone. I've met with some, you know, recently, you know, in person. You know, online is a tool. It's a double-edged sword, and depending upon how you use it, it can be used for the good or for the bad. And certainly, you know, we're seeing both. We're seeing a lot of cancel culture online. We're seeing a lot of recruitment online into a lot of these groups, extremist groups, etc. But it's also a means of connecting, you know, one another, and depending upon how you use it.
You have ongoing conversations and relationships with white supremacists, with KKK members. Do you ever worry about your safety?
Yes, and it's been imperiled from time to time. Fortunately for me, those times have been few and far between. But, you know, that's a risk, you know, you have to take. It goes with the territory. Somebody who is going to go so far as to join an organization that has a history of hating people so much that they string them up in a tree or drag them behind a pickup truck or bomb their churches and things like that, yeah, you know, you will face some of those people who believe in that, and I have. But there are others who, even people like that who have that mentality, if they are willing to sit down and have a conversation with you, there is at least an opportunity to plant a seed or offer a better perspective or perception, and hopefully they will resonate with it. But the key is, once you plant that seed, you must return and nourish it, water it, in order for it to bloom.
Hmm. Can you share with us one conversation that stands out in your mind from all the rest?
Sure. There are a lot of them, but I'll give you an example of something. And this is kind of amusing, actually. This guy was called an exalted cyclops in the Klan. That means a district leader. He was in my car with me one day. We're riding around, and he got on the topic of black people and crime. And he said something that I'd heard before from other Klan people, that all black people have a gene that makes us violent, because, you know, that's what's brainwashed into them. And I said to him, you know, what do you mean? And he said, well, who's doing all the drive-bys and carjackings in Southeast? He was referring to Southeast Washington, D.C., which is predominantly black. There's some white people who live there, but it's predominantly black and very high crime-ridden. And I said, okay, it's black people. I said, but that's what lives there. You know, you're not considering the demographics. Who's doing all the crime up in Bangor, Maine? You know, white people, because that's what lives there. He says, no. The demographics have nothing to do with it. You know, you all are born with this gene. So he's over in my passenger seat. I'm driving in the driver's seat. I look over at him and I said, listen, I'm as black as anybody you've ever seen. I have never done a carjacking or a drive-by. How do you explain that? He didn't even think about it for a second. He answered me, boom, like that. He said, your gene is latent. It hasn't come out yet. So I thought about it. And I said, you know, we all know that all white people have a gene within them that makes them a serial killer. And he says, well, how do you figure? And I said, name me three black serial killers. He couldn't do it. I said, they're all white. And I said, son, you are a serial killer. He said, Daryl, I've never killed anybody. I said, your gene is latent, hasn't come out yet. He goes, well, that's stupid. I said, you're right, it is stupid, but it's no more stupid for me to say that about you than what you said about me. And he got very, very quiet for a moment or two, and then he changed the subject. Within 5 months, he quit the Klan based on that conversation alone. And his robe was the first one I ever got. This is some years ago.
What could someone be doing today to help bridge the divide that we have in this country, even in small ways? Maybe they're not ready to go as far as meeting with a KKK member like you do, but they want to help build relationships with people who think very differently than they do. What do you recommend, Mr. Davis?
Sure. What I advise people to do is walk across the cafeteria and sit with somebody new who is not a member of your table group. You will learn something from them. You will teach them something about you, and you will gain a new friend. And it's, you know, as far as going to Klan rallies or neo-Nazi rallies, you know, if that's not your thing, if you're not comfortable with that, don't do it. You know, nothing says you have to do that. You have to be on the front line. You can be on the back line. You can be on the sideline. You can be online. but be doing something, even if it's, if you consider it to be minute, that supports those people on the front line that are bringing far right and far left people together to have these conversations and plant these different perceptions in their minds. Because one's perception is one's reality, and nothing gets resolved without conversation. A missed opportunity for dialogue is a missed opportunity for conflict resolution. So you can support those people working on the front lines, offer them encouragement, you know, provide them with support from that end. You don't have to be on the front line.
A missed opportunity for dialogue is a missed opportunity for conflict resolution.
Yes, ma'am.
Darryl Davis is a black blues musician and author who has spent years forming relationships with members of the Ku Klux Klan. His conversations have helped more than 200 white supremacists leave the group. Darryl Davis, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Gleason. I really appreciate you having me.